You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
In the beginning, there was darkness. Then, out of the void, came fire, smoke, Roto. Fantasy excellence begins here.
This is your time.
The Roto Experts in the Morning starts now.
It is Tuesday, May 16th, 2017, and this is the Roto Experts in the Morning. My name is Greg Salzman, joined as always by the fantasy executive Corey Parson, the King, Scott Angle, CTM Baseball's Matt Modica. We're here on a sunny Tuesday morning in New York City. Next 3 days will be ridiculously nice. We're up to 92
today
on Thursday.
Thursday, 92.
Today
we got
78, which is real nice. It is going to be a lovely, lovely week here in New York City, and maybe a lovely week for the New York Knicks tonight.
Yeah, well, these things normally don't happen for the Knicks, so we'll see how it plays out this time in this situation. Obviously, they're sending Clyde Frazier up there for them tonight, so hopefully Clyde the Glide gives them some luck. And Medica, we still got to go check out his restaurant.
That we do.
Yeah, there you go. You got the lottery tonight. That takes place, but Game 7 is in the books because the Eastern Conference Finals is now set. The Celtics and the Wizards played a good one for a while. Celtics pull away, and now it's LeBron versus the Celtics. One versus two in the East. Kind of how we figured it would be, and isn't it amazing how that works out, Matty?
Yeah, speaking of the Knicks, watching Game 7 last night, it was like John Wall channeled his inner John Starks. Because, I mean, he just couldn't hit. I mean, he couldn't hit the ocean.
Yeah.
It was really bad.
Yeah.
How that second half went.
He was 0 for 11 in the last 19 minutes, and you know, the Boston players were saying after the game that the coaching staff was telling them that, you know, his legs are going to go because, you know, he played 47 minutes in overtime, 42 in another game, and, you know, he's so wore down. But watching that second half, you know, when the Celtics pulled away, it was more of a thing like you could see they were really discombobulated on offense where, you know, Celtics were playing good D and, you know, the spacing was really good and, you know, they were very much in rhythm with the three-pointers as well.
You know who they need?
Boston or Washington?
No, the Washington. They need Klay Thompson. He would be perfect for them.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he's one of the best players in the league. He'd be perfect for everybody.
I would think he'd be perfect. So, yeah.
But, you know, a player like that can help them get to the next round.
they could use somebody who's like more of an interior presence and drive to the basket to complement those guys, because that was the difference between the Celtics and the Wizards on offense. The Wizards were just, they were so sloppy, like, especially when they got down by eight.
They don't have no depth.
Yeah.
Well, we said that all year long. Yeah. Depth was going to be an issue, and ultimately it was. Now, Boston's depth obviously helped them last night. Kelly Olynyk was fantastic.
Unbelievable how he played.
Unbelievable game from him. I think he had like 26 points or 28 points. It was just an awesome, awesome night for Kelly Olynyk and for Boston, who now move on to lose to LeBron. So that'd be cool.
Olynyk had a career high in the postseason, 26. It tied his season high at 26. But, you know, can he do this? And can Horford play like that against Cleveland like he did in this series? It's going to be hard to do.
Like I said, congratulations, Boston. Now you get to lose to Cleveland. Look forward to Cleveland and Golden State coming up soon. When we come back with the baseball headlines from yesterday, this is the Roto Experts in the Morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Back on the Roto Experts in the Morning. We were talking just a moment ago about the right to lose to LeBron in the East. It certainly seems like the Spurs will have the right to lose to the Warriors in the West without Kawhi Leonard ruled out for Game 2. We'll see if he comes back this series, Corey. I know you think the play was dirty.
Yep.
Certainly Greg Popovich thinks the play was dirty. Zaza Pachulia says, listen, I'm not a bad guy. It's, you know, I'm not a bad guy. Whatever. Doesn't matter now. Until Steph Curry gets destroyed. But besides that, it's all
there's going to be a retaliation.
There's going to be retribution. I believe Bruce Bowen announced he's coming out of retirement tonight.
did you see those gifs on Twitter yesterday with Bruce Bowen going like flying through the air, taking
people out? Yeah. And then that series against the Suns from years ago. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? The Pop cannot be the, you know, the...
He was like Bruce Lee, like mid-air.
Yeah. Pop can't act like it doesn't happen with the San Antonio Spurs also, but this instance right here is happening now.
Sure.
They never revealed the results in MRI, did they?
No, they did not.
He's probably pretty bad.
He's probably has a broken ankle.
He doesn't have, it's not a high ankle sprain.
High ankle sprain is the other one. I think it'll be interesting to see what happens because... I think he comes back to play at some point in the series, and you find out like just how bad it is.
Yeah,
kind of like a hockey style injury.
Well, yesterday we was on the news desk yesterday, and Seeley was like, "You can tell by the way he rolled his ankle; it's not only like a grade 2 sprain."
You know, Tony and I were talking.
You're not Dr. A.
It's Dr. Parson.
You're doing the damn rankings. I get it, but that don't mean that you're a doctor.
we were talking about this on Sincott and Engel this morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network about how tough it is to go through a big series or a big game without your best player. And I immediately thought, you know, you being a Knicks fan like me, when they went to the finals against San Antonio and they didn't have Ewing.
Ewing was beat up by them.
I felt like if they did have Ewing, they would have had a shot to win that series.
Oh, I don't agree with that at all. Ewing was way bad. He was traded. Wasn't he traded by that point?
He was. No. He got. I think he was going either that next season or the season after. He had multiple knee injuries.
Ewing wasn't doing anything that series.
Didn't they hang in like every game? No, it's like
they played well
that
series.
The one thing they were missing was Ewing.
No.
He came back for the Spurs series that year.
Ewing was terrible.
No,
all
he didn't
season
play
long.
That championship, didn't he?
He came back. He played for these. He's played in the series. Wait a minute. He played at some point. Either the Eastern Conference Finals or he sat the finals.
He sat the finals. I felt like they would have had a better shot to win because they were hanging with them.
He was beat up by then.
He did not play
in the finals. He played through the East. He got hurt in the Eastern
what
Conference
year was
Finals.
That?
1999.
Yeah.
He got hurt in the Eastern Conference Finals against the Pacers. Oh, Selena Roberts. Yeah. That's funny. I don't agree. To me... Ewing was so beat up by then.
He
wasn't in his prime, but I felt like he gave him an interior presence. They just lacked it. You know, they could do nothing in the middle because they didn't have him.
Yeah, but Kawhi might have been the second best player on the court.
Legitimately.
And it's a lot of good players on that court. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, what series can you remember with like or a game like your team like, you know, that you root for where like they were missing their best player and you felt like they didn't have a chance.
Yeah, I think we've seen that before. Of course, there's no example that comes to our mind, but you've seen that before, right? Like where the air just goes out of the room.
Momentum.
Once you lose your best player. Like I think we've seen it
when
in
Derek Jeter broke his ankle against the Tigers.
There you go. Derek Jeter broke his ankle against the Tigers. That series was over.
It was done.
And that was more like a Patrick Ewing example where Derek Jeter wasn't on top of his game.
Yeah,
anymore.
But right. He still had that a bat in his hand, and it was still like his presence. But then after that, it was done. But something will, if it doesn't happen tonight, it will happen on the weekend when they get to San Antonio. But something is going to happen. They're going to take a shot at us.
At Steph or Kevin Durant or both.
Yeah, at Steph or Kevin Durant and try to even it up. They probably won't fool with Draymond.
No, probably not. You don't fool with Draymond. That's absolutely not. Hey, other headlines from yesterday, as before we get into the baseball, is, hey, Eddie Lacy, Scotty, you got paid for not being that fat. That's cool.
Yeah, I think it was 3 pounds underweight. It's
2 pounds.
Yeah, two pounds underweight. Every pound makes a difference for him. It's, you know, so you got a little bit of a bonus here. I think, Eddie Lacy is Eddie Lacy. You know, he is who he is. We all talk about the weight, but I also feel like the Packers like didn't give him the ball consistently enough when he was healthy. I think the weight worries me because then, you know, you don't stay healthy, but the Packers didn't give him the ball enough when he was healthy. I think it's going to be different in Seattle.
I agree with Scott. I think Seattle was a perfect landing spot for him. Pete Carroll loves the big back, knows how to use the big back. And if his talents are utilized correctly, he could be a nice steal this year in drafts.
Eddie Lacy, I know, is ranked by Jake number 26 overall.
Yep, there you go. In a standard, mind you. This is Jake.
I just think it's funny, and we can get into football a little bit. later on, but I just think it's funny that Eddie Lacy gets paid $55,000 to in May to be at 253 pounds. It's just incredible to me. Seahawks just like
it might be something what psychological they're doing, because like the Packers were always like lose weight, and
the Seahawks are trying
a different approach. As wacky as it sounds, but you know, to rank him number 26, I think, you know, when the Seahawks were operating at their best, they had a physical runner like you're talking about. They're going to want to get him involved. The big thing why I wouldn't rank him that low, especially in standard, is this offense could move. And when they get down near the red zone, what they were really, really missing was, okay, let's cover Jimmy Graham. The Seahawks don't have really another consistent way to punch it into the end zone. Eddie Lacy's going to get a lot of touchdown opportunities, I think, with this offense when he's healthy.
I think so, too. I was the high guy yesterday in the news desk about Eddie Lacy, more so than Jake and Corey. And Corey said he can't see it happening with Lacy. I'm kind of interested.
If he stays healthy for four, if he plays 14 games, he could score 9 touchdowns.
I said 10, so.
Yeah.
Would you take him in the 5th or 6th round of a draft, Scott?
I would.
Yes. Oh,
yeah.
Definitely.
I would, too.
I think it's a nice tandem, him and ProSize.
I agree. That's a really
nice combination.
I agree.
Eddie Lacy's just been a disappointment. I can't waste draft
capital. You know why?
On
because, him. Because he was playing in Green Bay. Green Bay's the running game is secondary in Green Bay, where in Seattle, I think it's more of a prominent part of the offense.
Jake has Jamal
not as much
Williams.
As it was when, you know, when they won the Super Bowl, but.
Jake has Jamal Williams, the new running, the rookie running back in Green Bay, ranked 2 spots higher than Eddie Lacy.
No, I can't do that.
Yeah, the Packers
don't focus on the run enough.
And the very fact is, I know Eddie Lacy. I know if he stays healthy, he's going to get touchdown opportunities.
We've seen Eddie Lacy run. You know, when the guy is in there, he breaks tackles. Yeah. You know, he's got excellent vision. That almost sounds like, to rank him that low sounds like Eddie Lacy fantasy hate.
So the other last headline before we get into baseball from yesterday has to do with baseball, actually. Your boy A-Rod, you know, he's, you know, at the Met Gala with J-Lo, hanging with J-Lo. Guess he's going to be on the new season of Shark Tank.
Oh, really?
Alex Rodriguez.
They're taking away the best guy, though. Kevin O'Leary, Mr. Wonderful, was like, he was the reason.
He's being replaced by A-Rod?
That's what I was hearing. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. I hope that's wrong. I don't even watch the show anymore, but
you don't even watch
my
the
wife
show.
Did, I would watch. I thought he was the funniest guy.
I didn't see that. Let's see. Oh, Bethany Frankel's joining it, too.
No, no.
Oh, this is now we're gonna have to look
at Mark Cuban, I think, is a jackass, so. I mean,
I had a feeling you'd say that.
Me, too.
I assume he's just going to fill in on an episode. That's what usually these replacements do.
I thought he was coming in for a time.
No. I assume it's just he comes in for an episode. That's what, like, some of these, like...
That's where you found, what's that sport you play?
Spikeball. Yeah, absolutely. It's from Shark Tank.
I wouldn't call that a sport, Matt.
you'd be wrong.
I'm sorry, Craig.
You'd be very wrong.
You actually discovered that on Shark Tank?
Yes. Yeah.
Really?
It was a product of Shark Tank, and now it's very, very popular. Yeah,
I'm sorry, Greg.
I feel like you gotta be more athletic for spikeball than baseball. So there you go.
All right, I need to learn.
I feel like you don't even know what it is.
Do you think Alex Rodriguez will ever be respected in this city?
No.
No.
I have to say, I have a lot more respect for him now. I love watching him talk baseball.
I do too.
I am blown away.
He might get respect for that. He might be able to have a chance to remake himself a little bit.
I think he's gotten a lot of people were like surprised. A lot of people love the job he does.
Do you think they'll ever have A-Rod Day at the stadium?
No.
Come get booed one last time.
Yeah. Well, you never know. If the Yankees are having a down cycle, and you know, they need to just, like, you know.
The first 15,000 fans get syringes.
It's not nice, Scott. That's not nice as a Bartolo, or somebody who...
Yeah, big Bartolo,
Bartolo
fan.
Cologne.
Yeah, big Bartolo fan over there.
You can make any Met joke you want, but okay, I see the double standard.
Well, you should give out syringes.
I know.
So that seemed like a stretch. Yeah, you know what? Ultimately, Corey, I know everybody answered, like, no. And Bavona's like, Chad Curtis, who's like this criminal, is going to be like honored before A-Rod. That's not true. There's going to be some honor for A-Rod. Like,
2009 happened.
2009 happened. He, like, the steroid
thing.
Didn't
he win the MVP?
Sure.
As a Yankee?
Two. Yeah. The steroid thing is going to be in the past. They haven't given out 13 cents, you know, in this year. You know. I'm telling you, there's going to be something for A-Rod.
Time heals all.
There is.
Was
Corey,
I'll take $500 million
Corey, 4 years ago, hated A-Rod. Now you're defending him.
I,
You know who doesn't hate A-Rod? His teammates. His teammates do not hate A-Rod. They like him. Outside Derek Jeter, obviously. We come back. A lot of baseball from last night to get to, including the New York Mets, where... Nope. Come back after this. It's Roto Experts in the Morning, Fantasy Sports Radio Network. You know, it's funny how quickly things can change. Talk about baseball gods during the break. You know, everything you do is wrong. Every decision you make is wrong. Every move you make is incorrect. Yesterday, on the Fantasy Best Friends Forever...
BFFs.
We were talking about a lot of these guys that, you know, were hurt going into the week. And what do you do about them? AJ Pollock winds up on the DL. Carlos Gomez, about 4 to 6 weeks, he winds up on the DL. He will not be on my team by the end of the day, just for the record. Hunter Pence, disabled list. And because of all these guys in the DL, especially the pitchers, some of the better pitchers in baseball, of course, like Madison Bumgarner comes to mind. Noah Syndergaard comes to mind. You were kind of reevaluating who was left, right? And one of the names that was thrown at us yesterday was Carlos Carrasco. And Carlos Carrasco, the question was, is he now, in fantasy, not in real life, a top five, a top 10 pitcher in baseball? And I think the question really was top five. I think we all agree, yeah, top 10. Is he a top five pitcher right now going forward in fantasy? Like, what he is doing, what he is bringing you, where he is. Last night, Carlos Carrasco leaves the game with left pectoral tightness. Now, it's not an arm injury, not a shoulder injury, but Matty Modica, Carlos Carrasco, is he another one bites the dust here?
I was thinking that. I saw something, either it was late last night or this morning, one of the guys that follows the Indians, I'm trying to think of his name, but he's really good with that. He's really in touch with the Indians. Supposedly, the Indians are saying it's not a serious injury. I don't know if I'm buying that. I did take, after that mid-March injury that he developed, I did take Carrasco maybe in one or two places. I took a little bit of a gamble. He was a little depressed, and I was feeling pretty good yesterday. And I saw that tweet you mentioned, and I was like, you know what? I mean, Carrasco's looking great. I think everybody was pumped for last night's game, Carrasco versus Archer.
Yep.
And there was like 15 runs good.
Scotty, it's funny because this time last week, we sat here and we were just like, man, we got it wrong on Carrasco. Like, this is where the injury depressed the value enough. Like, I wish I got in. I wish I had more shares. Instead, I watched them pass by over and over because I didn't want to deal with the injury. And now here we are. It's May 15th. Carlos Carrasco's hurt.
Yeah.
You got to turn your mic on now.
Yeah.
My reasoning was that you weren't going to remember this injury in June.
Right.
The injury in the preseason was different than the one now. You have to wonder, what exactly was the injury in the preseason? I'm trying to remember.
Was it in spring training? Not,
yeah, in spring training, they took him off. He had elbow inflammation
Okay.
I thought was like,
so look,
definitely.
You know, maybe Corey can break it down better than I can. You don't know if he, and we can ask Dr. A about this tomorrow when he comes on, is like, was he compensating in some sort of way? A lot of times, you know, we'll say something like, okay, if he's dropping, take the shot because you just never know. We didn't know that Carlos Carrasco was necessarily going to get re-injured. You know, I don't think any of us have the medical expertise to know that. I think it's just unfortunate when you're getting out of Carrasco the first month and a half, you were feeling good. And hopefully, if this thing is not major, you're still going to feel good.
But one of the reasons, even before the injury in mid-March, the scare, he was even a little depressed for his skill set because of the injuries. I mean, I think Tristan Cockrock tweeted yesterday, since he joined the Indians rotation in, what, 2014 or whatever?
Yep.
He's like 10th in whip, 11th in strikeouts, but he also states that, you know, he's thrown less innings, and that's been the problem. I mean, this is a guy that, you know, when healthy, but, I mean, this is the thing. It's just guys like...
He was injured in the past before this.
Yeah, no, he's had
every year.
He's a late bloomer too. He was a guy that was expected.
So I looked it up as you guys were discussing here. Jordan Bastian,
does a good job.
Does a nice job for MLB. I think it works at MLB.com covering the Cleveland Indians. He basically his velo was down, as Matt likes to say. Velo was down last night, and he wasn't finishing his pitches.
Well, that's
the
scariest thing. When you see that, I mean, and that's usually Tommy John. That was like Jose Fernandez
sure.
a couple years ago.
And Francona saw it and was like, oh, shit.
See, now that's something the Mets don't do.
Correct. Like, they just keep going. Yeah. Keep it going.
Why is he throwing so slow?
God damn it, speed it up.
So Francona and the trainer come out and say, yeah, but my left side hurts. So they take him out of the game. And as you said, they don't necessarily really think it's all that serious. As they're like, listen, we'd hold a couple of days of rest. So just, he just felt tight, right? He just felt tight in his left pectoral. Carlos Carrasco said this after the game, quote, I feel fine. Just kind of got pec tightness, so that's why they took me out of the game. In the fourth, I felt it more as I was throwing a little bit. I was not able to finish my pitches. Then my velocity went down.
All right, so what has happened is obviously, you know, you got to throw the force comes from here.
100%.
So it's tightness in the pectoral muscle, and this, and mine's are not really that developed. Yeah. I know
you keep rubbing yours with the description too.
Yeah, you get a little excited.
Yeah, yeah. So basically, obviously,
can I feel your pectoral muscle.
Yeah,
can I feel your pectoral.
No,
muscle?
No. You touch your
only
tip.
Only off the bottom of your head, right?
You touch your tip.
Yeah, I got money. Hold on.
So here's the thing, right? With the pectoral muscle, obviously, this is causing him to. Good motion, Greg. This is causing him to, you know, it will decrease velocity because he's throwing and it hurts because he needs his right. muscle. Now he says he just has tightness in it. More than this is my uneducated guess. He'll probably have to skip a start right. so he doesn't strain the pectoral muscle.
Sounds like a DL stint to me.
If it is, it's a 10-day.
Yeah,
a 10-day. So he doesn't strain the pec muscle. So, if he strains it, it's over.
Well, I'd be a little more cautious than that.
As Corey was just saying, right? Like because of where your pec is, as you finish the motion, you're straining it more. Essentially,
oh, yeah. It hurts.
It hurts. So he wasn't finishing his pitches to avoid being hurt, and he wasn't getting as much velocity because he wasn't finishing his pitches. It all kind of adds up. So. Everyone says it's going to be a couple days. I agree with Scotty that ultimately you throw him on the disabled list because mm-hmm. it's 10 days, it's one start.
His team wants to contend.
I would right. I would want to give him at least 2 weeks or so. There's no reason to rush this. Cleveland, you know, that division is very winnable. They have some other issues they got to deal with, Kluber coming back and stuff. Put him away for like at least 2 weeks. Let this guy, you know, he's too good. He's too important to that team.
Yeah, they want to contend. You know, they don't want to do anything in the short term that'll affect the long term. Common sense.
So
he's been elite too this season.
He sure has. So if Carlos Carrasco does go on the disabled list, this again opens up space for Mike Clevinger, who I want to bring up. Of course, Corey Kluber on the way back here. Clevinger may get one more start, may not. If Carrasco goes down, you have to imagine Clevinger stays in the rotation. If Mike Clevinger is out there, Matt, is he someone that we should be picking up?
I mean, from deeper leagues, I'm not going to do it in a 12 team. I mean, unless I start seeing some stuff. I mean, these are guys, there's certain guys that will have a good start. Anybody could come out. I mean, Alex Meyer on Sunday, who was a former first round pick who's had control issues, you know, and has been traded from the Twins, who desperately need like guys who can strike people out.
Well, they traded for Hector Santiago, a major league starter.
Yeah, but this was a guy that the Twins, not too long ago, sure. They had visions of Berrios, Meyer.
And, yep, Duffy, yeah. Gibson. Yeah, that was the rotation. That was the rotation.
So, I mean, in a 15-team league, yeah, he's on a good team. I'm interested. In a 12-team league, in a spot start, you know. But I think what's happening in baseball right now and for fantasy purposes, you're going to have to – what I would be looking at are guys like, say, a Jose Quintana, who's – his problem right now is he's walking too many people. He's given 200 innings or more every season. He's a little depressed right now. These are guys you got to go after. Guy Rick Porcello's. These guys will be there through September, most likely. These guys.
Everybody knows to like buy low on these guys because I own both of them and I'm constantly getting offers for him and Danny Salazar. Everybody wants to speculate on Salazar right now.
Yeah, no, because
he has that strikeout potential. You know, there's another Cleveland pitcher there. People just feel that Salazar is better than he's shown, but you know, the other side is. He has yet to show any consistency in his career.
Scott, you are 100% right. And it's guys like, say, even Alex Wood, who I'm giddy about right now, I'm concerned that he has to hold up. I don't know if he can hold up throughout the season. Nate Karns flashed last week. Nate Karns, to me, is still a 15-teamer, AL only, and a streamer in 12s, but his stuff is looking good, but he has to figure out that third turnaround.
Matt, you said that Jose Quintana is depressed?
No, his
values.
Oh, values.
But he might be depressed because of all these trade rumors and stuff. That might be something you could ask. You know,
I was going to say, we could ask this, like, the trade sports psychologist.
Trade rumors is absolutely something the last sports psychologist coming up on our program, coming up at 9:20 Eastern time today. Speaking of...
I thought he was, like, depressed.
Speaking of pitchers, like, I mentioned Mike Clevinger a moment ago. You Bad mentioned mood. Nate Karns and Alex Wood. We can throw this on the screen here on the simulcast because there's five players to watch right now here in the MLB. Nate Karns is on the list. Alex Wood is on the list. And the number one guy is the one that started against the Mets last night, and that is, of course, Zach Godley. Right? Everybody loves Zach Godley coming in this week. He was one of the major major waiver wire claims over the past weekend. Threw 6 2/3 last night. One hit. One run. Walk five. But he struck out 7. Zach Godley, the number one guy that we think you should be watching right now. What do you think, Scott, of his performance last night?
I saw some of it. The command was not there early. Mm-hmm. He could not locate his fastball, so then he went to the curve, and the hitter started chasing it. So, you know, very good that, like, when a pitcher doesn't have his best stuff, he can go to the secondary stuff and adjust. But the command was an issue. 5 walks. He's going to have to rein that in. His next start is against Pittsburgh. If you picked him up in a 2-start week, you know, you might get 2 victories out of this. You know, the minor league numbers were kind of promising, you know, from what we saw so far this year. You know, but this guy plays in a tough home park. You know, and I feel like with the command, it's something you got to watch. But you know, nice back of the staff kind of pickup.
I mean, for this week with Pittsburgh, like you said, on deck too. I mean, you got to be ecstatic if you have him for this week. My thing is, I don't have the stats in front of me, but I believe Zach Godley did this like a year or two ago. He came up, he had a really nice run to start, and then it went a little south. So I would just keep that in the back of your mind. It is a tough park.
I'm about to say, especially pitching in that park, if it gets ugly, it can get real ugly.
Yeah. If you're walking 5 guys most of the time, it's not going
to
end well.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to strand them like he was last night.
I think De La Rosa got the W last night, though.
He did. Ray De La Rosa picks up the win last night. You talk about five walks. That's what I felt like Edwin Diaz had last night. As he was that's another way we have to get into as well. We got a lot of baseball from last night to get into. We'll stick with the Mets. I want to give you Zach Wheeler's fantastic line as well. Get into the Mets and the Diamondbacks. We'll get back to Chris Archer and the Indians as well. Talk about Edwin Diaz, too. A lot of baseball coming your way. This is the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. This is the Roto Experts in the Morning.
See, you got a little soul clap going, Scotty.
There you go.
You know who sings this song?
Pharrell.
No.
It is Pharrell.
It's not Pharrell.
I'd like one of those big hats.
It's not.
It's Jay-Z.
This was Jay-Z?
Yeah.
It was Jay-Z and Pharrell.
I think I know where the sample comes from, too.
Where?
From Vanity.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it does come from Vanity. Nice job, Scotty.
Yeah.
Jay-Z featuring Pharrell. How about that?
There you go.
Yeah. How about that? We were right there together. All right, the Mets last night.
Oh, this June 9th is Reggie Jackson bobblehead doll.
How are you going?
I would like to. I'd like to get a Reggie Jackson bobblehead.
That'd be a cool one to get.
Why? Yeah.
Huh? I was always a fan of Reggie.
And who doesn't like Reggie Jackson? Like Reggie Jackson.
Best candy bar ever. The Reggie bar.
Yeah. Reggie.
But you never saw Reggie play, though.
Reggie with the A's was pretty damn awesome. And you get to watch clips of that. Or that,
oh, yeah.
That
I saw him play in the World Series when I was young, yeah.
Scott, I was born in October. I was born the night Reggie Jackson hit 3 home runs.
Yeah, but you don't remember watch the game, though.
You were born the night Reggie Jackson hit 3 home runs?
Huh?
You were in the night.
Yeah.
October 18th.
Papa Parsons was pumping away.
It seems that this is not true.
Nah, I was born the week earlier. I was born.
So my dad was my dad's birthday.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I know the date.
Yeah, mine is the
October,
11th.
Really? October 18th.
Nice. I was born the week before he hit the 3 home runs.
October 11th. How about that?
Mm-hmm.
Look at that.
Mr. October. I'm Mr. October.
No, Albert Pujols is Mr. October.
Albert Pujols. Is who?
Not what?
Yeah, he's Mr. October.
Pujols.
Or maybe David Ortiz.
I believe that's Reggie Jackson, the guy's.
No.
No, you know, he's more, you know how he's a Mets fan. He's, yeah,
no,
you know how
I'm
that
just
goes.
Screwing with you. It's got nothing to do with the Mets.
Let's talk
be a
about
Reggie Jackson fan.
Let's talk about the Miserables. I agree. The Miserables fell again yesterday to the Diamondbacks 7-3. Zach Godley gave you the line. It's one of the best performances from Monday night. We'll get to the others in a little bit. For the Mets, though, very encouraging performance from Zach Wheeler. 6 innings, 7 hits, 1 run. He struck out 6.
Nice.
It was Hansel Robles, though, that could not do anything right, as he allowed 5 runs on 4 hits, 2 homers. The big blast, my man, Yasmani Tomas, a three-run shot, and that gave the D-backs the win for good. For Yasmani Tomas, that was his seventh home run of the year. Jake Lamb had his eighth of the year last night. Dennis Descalzo is third, and Jeff Mathis is second. That's a lot of home runs the Mets allowed last night, guys.
Yeah, it was all on the bullpen because, like you said, Wheeler had another good start. He was actually hitting 97 on the gun last night, and he's only allowed one run in four of his last five starts. You saw the walks. We were kind of getting kind of concerned about it because he had walked four batters in each of the last two starts. He only walked one last night. Right now, the Mets pitching staff is pretty much DeGrom and Wheeler and, you know, anything else you can cobble together. Steven Matz, though, and Seth Lugo are starting rehab assignments on Thursday. They're hoping to have them back by the beginning of June. So if Lugo is a free agent in your league, we always talk about anticipating. Maybe you pick up Seth Lugo on a flyer because Syndergaard's going to be out.
So that's where I disagree. We talk about anticipation. A lot of times it's closers where the anticipation comes in, right? But we talk about injuries, injury optimism, right?
Right.
I think especially with this team, with the luck that they have had, to just anticipate Seth Lugo is going to come back and just be awesome. Not awesome. Be fantasy worthy is just a major step. Like, no setbacks. Because you got to waste a roster spot on him.
Scott, your point isn't wrong. Seth Lugo, I'm concerned about because of the elbow. But, like, people were picking up Junior Guerra this past week.
And he got bombed yesterday.
And he had, what was it? Something with his calf or something like that. Yeah. It wasn't an arm thing. So.
But even still, I make this mistake every year. I'm currently making the mistake right now as I'm telling you, and I know I'm making a mistake.
Tyson Ross.
Exactly who it is. I own Tyson Ross. And I got really excited because the initial report on Tyson Ross, he's back the first week in May, he is making all this progress, and he went down with a back injury, right? And now he's ramping up again. He had a simulated game this week, he'll have another simulated game on Saturday, and it'll be in a minor league rehab start. You know what? I'll probably have another setback, and I'll sit here, and I'll still own Tyson Ross. And this is me being an idiot.
You don't get fantasy points for simulated games, Greg.
Correct. But that's the thing with Seth Lugo, too.
Here's the thing with Seth Lugo. What are you going to spend to get Seth Lugo? You're going to spend $1. You're going to spend $2, right? But here's the other part of it, though. They're saying he has a rehab assignment on Thursday. By the time waivers roll around on Sunday, you'll know how he looked. You spend a dollar or two, you stash him. You know, if the guy comes back, he pitches well for two, three starts, and he helps your fantasy teams. He gets hurt again. What did you spend? $2?
It's not about the money.
It's what did you miss? I'm not disagreeing with you. I like to look at injured guys coming back, trying to get ahead of the game. I think Scott's 100% there. But you also have to take into consideration, what are you giving up? Who could you have had?
Right.
You know, so it's a balance.
It's not about the money for me. Tyson Ross cost me nothing, right? He's just sitting on my DL. But as I'm sure all four of us at this table know, and anybody listening or watching knows, there are so many guys in the DL these days because of the 10-day DL, because of whatever. There's so many guys that are hurt that even if you have a DL spot, even if you have two DL spots, to quote-unquote waste it on a guy that, like, maybe will be good when he comes back, maybe won't have any setbacks and he'll be back next week or in 2 weeks or whatever, it's a lot. And this is coming from someone that's sitting here with Tyson Ross on his DL despite having four other guys on his team on the DL right now. That's me.
Well, here's about you're talking about a waste, right?
Yes.
It's
waste of roster spot.
I'll cut Joaquin Benoit and pick up Seth Lugo and spend $2. You know, you already have Tyson Ross, so I kind of understand that you already have a roster spot in which enough roster spots. I'm saying I believe your point is valid.
Sure.
I believe my point is valid. I'm not saying it's a waste because if you have the bench room and it's just a buck or two, go ahead and do it.
I totally understand your point.
Especially if you have DL spots,
But here's where I'll go with this, Scott, right? I agree. I want to get in because I'm desperately looking for pitching. I think we're always desperately looking for pitching. But here's where I'll say. You want to pick up Seth Lugo, that's fine, right? We can anticipate that. But the second that Seth Lugo has a setback, I'm not saying he's going to, but if he does, you don't hang around and wait.
Yeah.
That's the issue.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'll spend $2,
sure,
right?
Yeah.
He gets hurt again. No, I'm saying it is about the money because you're spending nothing to do it. He gets hurt again. Goodbye.
Correct. That's what we have to make sure you do.
The guys that I'm looking for in the end game that I'm playing, and I've mentioned this, I've kind of harped on it, is like Mike Montgomery. I think at some point he gets into that rotation.
Right.
Eddie Butler has pitched well in AAA. He had a good outing there. But other guys to look at, if you see like Matt Stram, get sent down to the minors at some point over the next month, and say the Royals start selling and they want to start stretching him out, he's a guy, that's a guy that you got to be active and ahead of the game on, because he's shown that, you know, he has a chance to be really good.
Greg said twice this segment, Scott, that it's not about the money with him.
The Fab, because you can't take Fab to the strip club.
Okay.
You mentioned Eddie Butler a moment ago. Would you rather have Mike Clevinger or Eddie Butler?
I would rather have Eddie Butler for the fact that he's the Cubs' fifth starter. That's been the recurring theme. I want that Cubs' fifth starter. Like I said, he was once a promising prospect. He's with the Cubs. He's pitched well. He's a Nando DeFino favorite.
No, that's big.
That's Matt Strand.
Nando been talking about Butler for a minute now.
Yeah. So, mm-hmm. He's a guy that has the opportunity now. I'm rooting for him to fail, even though I have him in a couple of like
drafts. Because you want Mike Montgomery.
Because I want Montgomery. I have him in my bigger leagues. I want to see Montgomery get the opportunity. I think he has the skills to succeed.
I bring up Clevinger because I want to get back into this Indians-Rays game. I know it didn't go well for Corey because Chris Archer allowed five innings, allowed 7 runs, 6 earned, 6 walks, 6 strikeouts.
Horrible performance.
And basically, Archer on the road is just a thing.
That's what's keeping Chris Archer from winning an AL Cy Young.
Correct.
His road performances, it's year in and year out. You know, the home runs go up, the walks go up on the road. Obviously, the Trop is a very nice place
this
to pitch.
This was disappointing because I wanted to get off to a good start in Tout Wars with my pitching this week. And I wake up this morning, and the first thing I do is I check the line, and I'm like, what the hell is wrong with this guy last night? Yeah, he K'd 6, but he walked six, gave up 6 earned, you know what I'm saying? He's got to do a better job than this. I'm trying to take down Adam Rollins.
About Archer. Number one, he's essentially a two-pitch pitcher. And wherever you do that, you know, it doesn't consistently live well. You know, he doesn't have enough of a third pitch. The second thing is, it bears the question to throw it out to the group, Greg. Do you consider benching Archer if he's got only a road start or two road starts in a two-turn week?
It's too much strikeouts to do that.
I understand what you're saying. I mean, yeah, it's
throwing it out.
The one place I will bench him if it's like only one start is anytime he goes to Fenway.
What about Toronto?
I don't know his numbers, career numbers in Toronto, but I know his numbers in Fenway, and they are just god awful. He gets lit up like a Christmas tree. Every time
Yankee Stadium, the ball's going to fly out, right?
Sure. And last night's Indians game, in this game for the Indians, rather, first time since they've been together for close to a year now that Andrew Miller and Cody Allen have both allowed a run in the same game. How about that? First time since they've been together, which is obviously last July. Very cool.
One of the things Terry Francona has been doing to like ex players and coaches, and he did it to Kevin Cash. It was pretty cool. He put it on the Jumbotron, awesome. Like in like batting practice, whatever. Like Kevin Cash among qualified batters who did this, he was like the fifth worst
OPS in the history of baseball. It was actually hysterical.
That's a cool, fun thing.
You mentioned that stat. Miller's ERA, though, it went up to 0.47 and Allen's at 172. And it's interesting with Allen because everybody would talk about like those closures at the top, like Kenley Jansen and Chapman and stuff like that. I would say wait for Cody Allen. He's been really, really good.
I think the reason people don't wait for Cody Allen is because Andrew Miller's always there lurking.
Yeah, you know,
I think Andrew Miller's going to ramp up as the season goes along.
He's always there lurking, but Allen does the job. I don't want to spend for a top closer. I ended up with Cody Allen like on two of my four teams.
I got Scott is right. A lot of people, including myself, I have 0 shares of Cody Miller.
Same.
I have a bunch of Andrew Miller, but the reason I have Miller is I still think he'll wind up getting some saves this year, but he's going to pitch about 80 innings at some point. He'll finish that season, and those ratios are just going to be lovely.
Yes.
Lions isn't all. It is 4th homer of the year. That was a 3-run bomb off of Archer in the first. Francisco Lindor, his 9th home run of the year.
Yeah, with Francisco Lindor, it's interesting because his career high is 15. And with the Greenwich Street Tavern League, I said, man, I took Lindor over Story. I shouldn't have done that. I'm glad I didn't do that.
Hey, Modica, you taking Carlos Correa or Francisco Lindor as your AL MVP?
I didn't hear what you said.
Lindor Correa as your MVP.
I'm going to stay with Carlos Correa.
All right, there you go. We're going to come back. More baseball coming your way right after this. Kevin Kiermaier homered again last night.
Ever since I benched them on Friday.
Three? Is that three?
He's hitting home runs over Chris Sale.
Over Carlos Carrasco.
He was back in the lineup yesterday.
Yeah, he was. Kelly Kiermaier's third home run of the year. He goes 2-for-2 with a walk and strike out.
Scott don't have... He don't even know what we're talking about, Scott.
I'm totally listening. Everything they're saying about Kiermaier, that's his boy.
Scott could walk and chew gum at the same time.
It's true. You was jamming and listening.
I was jamming and listening, man.
Yeah, I love that.
See, he's enjoying... I'm enjoying New York groove. He's enjoying a rebound night by Kevin Kiermaier.
I'm not enjoying it. He's not on my team anymore. So.
You caught him?
Yeah. You know, we talked about this last week.
I forgot about that.
I'm sorry. Hey, a fun game last night, including we had two of the five best performances of the night took place in San Diego with the Padres defeating the Brewers by the score of 6-5. I got to be honest with you, and Corey, I'm sure you'll appreciate my honesty here.
Love honesty.
So Luis Perdomo went 6 innings, 5 hits, 3 runs, 9 strikeouts. And I've never been someone that's interested in Luis Perdomo. Why? Because I know Luis Perdomo was this 34-year-old dude, a pitcher for the Padres, and he's been around the block, right?
Yep.
So that's Luis Perdomo.
Ham and Agger.
The problem is, wrong Luis Perdomo. This guy's 24 years old.
Yep.
I would say to myself.
Had a great minor league track record. And I swear on my life, and I again, I'm not supposed to admit these things. Fine, whatever. I had no idea this is a different Luis Perdomo. They both pitched for the Padres. How was I supposed to know this is a different guy?
Did you pick up the wrong one?
No, I didn't pick up the wrong one.
Unless you got the MLB package and you tune into the Padres every night, you don't notice.
All I know was this guy came up last year, and he pitched fine, and he has a lot of strikeouts. I mean, he had career-high strikeouts last night with 9. He had strikeout potential, had a quality start last night. And we talked about him on the BFFs yesterday, and I had absolutely no idea this guy was any different. I was never interested in this guy because he was a ham and egger, I thought. And now I thought this is a young guy. Now I'm more interested.
He hasn't spent a lot of time in the minors. So he's kind of learning at the major league level. But some of the results have been impressive. Right now, he has the highest ground ball rate in all of baseball. And I think he surpassed Kyle Freeland. And if he's going to continue to strike out guys too, this is somebody, he's a must add. I remember some other fantasy analysts talking him up a little bit in the preseason.
Yeah,
I didn't quite kind of see it, but now I'm seeing it. You could say, okay, he plays in San Diego. He's not going to get a lot of wins, but look, you can't chase wins anyway.
Yeah, he's been a guy even dating back to last year. Like Scott says, some guys in the industry have he's a deeper guy. Like in the deeper leagues, he's had name recognition. People do like him. I know Todd Zola has been in love with him for like the last year or so, and stuff like that. The thing is, last night, too, though...
I love Todd.
Todd's a good guy.
I love Todd Zola.
The thing is, last night, he did get a little help with that lineup, not having Eric Thames, not having Travis Shaw. Mm. I'm not trying to rain on his parade. He got 9 strikeouts, 0 walks.
He's a strikeout Brewers, regardless.
That's a good point. It's a good point, too.
Most interesting thing about this game?
Yep.
Drake got the win. I didn't even know Drake was a pitcher.
Drake got the loss.
Yeah.
Drake got the loss. Drake lost the game.
Yeah, he did.
Oh, my goodness.
Sorry.
Corey Kluber just tried to throw three batters, though.
Bing, bing, Drake. Bing,
bing. That was a loss, too. Jesus Aguilar.
Hotline bling.
With his
different Drake.
Homer, different Drake, yeah.
Oh,
Eric Sogard hit home run. He's got funny glasses. Well, man.
Two.
I understand. He's still, he didn't hit two. He hit one last night.
One
home run last night.
He's been hitting home runs against the Mets.
He had back-to-back days, but he had one home run last night. Jumping over me there. Hernan Perez was 2-for-5 and a couple of runs scored. And this guy just keeps hitting, man. 291 average. Just my man.
I mean, it's they have to give him. He has to play.
He's not
yet. You got to find
the spot. We're trading with the Mets!
Yeah, please.
The one thing is, and I keep seeing people, Aguilar homered for the third time last night.
Mm-hmm.
People are saying, okay, they can put Aguilar at first base and Thames in left
he's
field.
A lefty specialist.
But why do that? Why do that, you know, when your guy is playing the way he is?
100%. By the way, Ryan Schimpf, 0-for-5, 4 strikeouts. He's batting 154. Corey Spangenberg time, indeed. 3-for-5 last night. We come back, hour number two. Underway. This is the Roto Experts in the Morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
In the beginning, there was darkness. Then, out of the void, came fire, smoke, Roto.
Fantasy excellence begins here.
This is your time.
The Roto Experts in the Morning starts now.
Hour number two of the Roto Experts in the Morning is live here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
I love Scotty.
You hear the guys in the background, Corey Parsons, Scott Angle, Matt Mojica.
Scotty playing up for the cameras, you know what I'm saying? Good morning, hour number two. How are we doing this morning, Greg?
Doing well, man. How are you?
I'm feeling real good, you know what I'm saying? What we got? Oh, we got game two tonight, so that's cool. What's up with the NHL? Did they stop playing?
No. There was actually a really good game last night. I caught the end of it. Ottawa and Pittsburgh. Uh-huh. Pittsburgh tied the series. I mean, Ottawa's held them to two.
Tied a game apiece?
Yeah, tied a game apiece. 1-0 game. Ottawa's held them to one goal in each game, which is pretty damn impressive. Mm.
Yeah, damn impressive. Yeah,
no, Ottawa, apparently Ottawa, you know what I'm saying, is
they're living a charmed life. I don't know how to beat the Rangers.
I heard Kurtz said they're playing good, so that's what's up. Ottawa. All right, cool.
There you go. So,
my Ottawa Senators.
last night Seattle won a game 6-5 against the Oakland Athletics, and Yonder Alonso has the most home runs in May. He's got 8 of them. He was 0 for 3 last night. Had a couple of strikeouts, walked a couple of times as well. But the story of this game for me, that was Edwin Diaz. So, Yavani Guerrero pitches a quality start. 3 innings and 6 1/3. Struck out 5 guys. Steve Cishek returns from the disabled list. Pitches to 1 batter. Gets him out. All right, that's pretty good. Mark Szczepanski comes in. He gets his guy out. Nick Vincent comes out. He gets his guy out. And all of a sudden, it's the 9th inning. And when Diaz comes on, doesn't allow a hit. If I told you that, you'd be like, all right, that's pretty good. Problem is, he walked 4 guys.
Yeah.
And he walked 2 guys in, that meant. It was not a good spot Edwin Diaz.
Well, here's the thing. Yes, fact, not a good spot. But, you know, it's not like we've seen this thing consistently from Diaz. What we've went through with closers, though, this season, everybody's going to panic when one of these happens. You know, not every starter's going to get it done every single time out. You know, I don't know if I'm that worried about Diaz, but heck, if you want to speculate, Steve Cishek just did come off the DL, and the guy does have closing experience.
The guy I would look for as the threat is Tony Zick. That's the guy. Cishek, to me, Scott's right. Some of the managers, they love that, you know, past. He's done it.
Closing experience.
Is there a threat, Matt, though? Is there a threat?
No, not right now, but he's got to start pitching better.
He has to
pitch well. I mean, if we look, since May started, he's got like 8 appearances and only 2 games without allowing a run.
Maybe he's hurt.
You say, Matt, Tony Zick over here, he pitched after Edwin Diaz. Like, to me, I want like a guy pitching the 8th.
Well, Zick just got off of the DL.
That's true. So Nick Vincent's the guy I want to watch as well. Nick Vincent pitched right before Edwin Diaz. He's a name I want to keep an eye on. We'll talk more about this game.
I go Cishek.
Because Sean Manaea also came off the DL on this one. We'll talk about Manaea's start as well. This is the Roto Experts in the Morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. The Roto Experts in the Morning.
The faces are the best,
though. Yeah, he's really into this
Fantasy
one right here.
Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Yeah, he really likes American Hi-Fi.
Yeah,
he's super into it. Scott, you had a
play the drums and the guitar
same time.
Yeah,
you had a point you wanted to bring up about Edwin Diaz.
Yeah, with Edwin Diaz, it's very interesting.
Hey, no, wait a minute.
With Edwin Diaz, it's very interesting because, you know, I was actually like looking at the game log, you know, and you were right. It's been kind of bumpy lately. He has converted 7 of 9 chances, though. The ERA is kind of high. But here, what I want to go back to is, even when we're in the midst of fantasy baseball season in May, you always like want to rethink and, you know, maybe give yourselves a little bit of lessons. Edwin Diaz was like the 3rd, 4th closer off the board, you know, in a lot of drafts. And I was talking about waiting for Cody Allen. you know, people were spending high amounts in auctions or taking him early. And this was a guy with not a proven
track
record of a closer.
Sam.
I have.
They were talking about how hard he threw. That's not what it's all about.
I'll tell you this. I waited. I could have taken Zach Britton, and I waited an extra couple rounds to take Edwin Diaz.
And you could have.
I'd still rather have Edwin Diaz than Zach Britton.
And nobody sitting.
I waited for Cody Allen.
Is anybody sitting at the table on Craig Kimbrell anywhere?
I wish.
I think
people were taking Diaz over Kimbrell.
I did.
Maybe one league.
Maybe one league. Yep.
And that was with a partner that kind of wants.
Kimbrell's got the track record.
I mean, I think the biggest problem for Edwin Diaz in the month of May, in at the 7 or 8 appearances, is he's got a 46% first strike pitch. That's, you are not going to do well. You are not going to succeed.
You're
going to
get behind hitters, you know, in the key parts of the game. Not good, because then you got to start aiming, etc.
Yep, 100%. Modiga, you said you always appreciate Nelly Cruz home runs. He hit his 9th last night off of Shamania. Kyle Seager, his 3rd last night. And Seager had a really good night, going 1-for-4 with those 2 ribbies. And Nelson Cruz also had that home run, like I said.
You know what, Nelson Cruz? It's very interesting. It's like, this is the first time I may have heard us talk about Nelson Cruz all season. It's like, because he's so consistent, it's like people just don't talk about him. It's like, it's not sexy, but it's like, because you know what Nelson Cruz is going to give you.
100%. Chris Davis hit his 11th bomb of the year. Steven Vogt, he's 2nd.
This guy can play, this Davis guy.
Yeah, Chris Davis, he's got a lot of power. Batting 220, that's
yeah.
guy.
Yeah.
And Steven Vogt's another guy, 217
yeah,
on the
only
year.
2 home runs.
Yeah,
Vogt is surprising. I think the average, I've looked at him as like a 260 hitter, hit like, you know, dozen home runs. So I thought he was more of a safe catcher option. Still full season left.
Houston defeated Miami last night by the score of 7-2. Joe Musgrove, huh?
As soon as you cut him.
Musgrove. 5 2/3.
Joe Musgrove.
But Joe Musgrove has
Joe Musgrove. Cut Joe Musgrove.
But BFF.
Cut
Joe
that Musgrove. BFF's be so happy.
That was a start you want to stream Joe Musgrove.
So,
you know, Miami.
I decided to stream Jesse Chavez, as I told you yesterday morning. Instead, it worked out okay. Gave me the quality start and the win. So it was all right. But Edwin Diaz effed my ERA up.
But not even Joe Musgrove. It's Dan Straley who.
That's why I wanted to bring it up. Jump the gun a little bit. Joe Musgrove, 5 2/3, 8 hits, 1 run, only walked 1, struck out 5. Musgrove, 2 starts in a row that are good. The reason I didn't pick up Musgrove is because the 2nd start this week is against the Indians, and I was like, no thanks. So Musgrove gets the win. Australia, though, as Matt just alluded to, pitched really well. 5 innings, just 1 hit, 1 walk, 3 strikeouts, left the game after getting hit with a line drive in the forearm.
To me, he was a guy like Jeremy Hellickson. Guys that I had last year that overperformed, they did very well, that I didn't think they could do it again. And the one thing, I will root for him, Australia. Eno Saris wrote a piece about him, how this is a guy that's always trying something new. Like, just, he's trying to do anything he can to stay in the game and to succeed. He doesn't have overpowering stuff and all that. And he's had some games where, like, the Mets, I think it was 5 or 6 innings, he was no-hitting them. We got like a 12 or 14 strikeout game this year. I mean, Dan Straley, you know, you have to start. I mean, I have to start reevaluating my thoughts on Dan Straley right now.
Real quick, if I can make some points about another Marlin, Justin Bour hit his 8th home run last night. And this is a guy that he hit some majestic shots. Look at his shot from May 12th that he hit off Mike Fultonevich. The thing actually, like, soared above the stadium and, like, hit off the upper deck. You know, people talk about Stanton. Bohr's got incredible power, too. He's very, very streaky. We talk about these classic kind of power hitters, Greg, where they go hot and they can really boost your power, but then they go cold and they can really hurt your batting average. Bohr's hitting over 300 this month. In the last week, he's hitting 450 with 4 home runs and 7 RBIs. You got him in your lineup right now. He's helping you maybe for the next week and a half before he goes cold again.
Scott, would you rather own Justin Bohr or Tommy Joseph?
Oh, that's a good one, Greg.
I'm going to say Justin Bohr. You know why? Because he's a little bit more proven. I know that he's capable of hitting those 25, 26 bombs, or 20 plus, or whatever you want to say. I don't want to argue on the number. Tommy Joseph can be Justin Bohr statistically, but Justin Bohr is more established.
Justin, Tommy Joseph playing Citizens Bank, though.
It's true.
Justin Bohr can hit him out of anywhere.
Yeah, Justin Bohr can. He's hit 4 homered in 4 of the last 5 games.
They said like that homer Saturday like traveled like 100, almost 170 feet in the air.
That's a good one, Greg. I might lean Tommy Joseph. It's pretty much a coin toss for me. just because the average, I think, could possibly be a little better. But like Scott says, he's the more proven guy.
Yeah, but I, you know what? I don't want to veer too far from what we're talking about, though, here game by game. But right now, I'd rather have Justin Smoke than either one of them because the guy has been hitting every month. He's been consistent from start so far to now, and he's been a big surprise.
Mm-hmm. I think I'd rather have Joseph than Justin Smoke. And possibly Boer.
You know what?
Justin, I don't trust Justin Smoke.
Justin Smoke is a guy where I expected it to go down, but he's consistently been doing it for 2 months straight now.
I have one share of Justin Smoke in my AL only, and I am loving it.
I have him in the Greenwich Street Tavern League, and I'm loving it. Right now, I have Smoke at first, and I got Boer at utility this week because when you watch Marlins games, you say, Boer's going to get hot. You put him in the lineup.
I'll say this about Smoke real quick. And I'm going to enjoy this ride right now. I mean, he's what? Career 225 hitter.
Yeah. You know. He's never put it together.
You are.
It could flame out, but I'm going to ride it.
Oh, it will flame out.
2 months.
Smoke will flame out. Gosh, I wish I had the bell for that. Thank you. I appreciate it. Yuli Gurriel had his third home run of the year. Jose Altuve hit his sixth of the year. Gurriel, 2-for-4, 293.
Mm-hmm. It was a grand slam last night, too.
You mentioned that.
Yeah.
Altuve, as I said, was 2-for-4. He had a solo shot in the ninth off of Dustin McGowan. For the Marlins, of course, we mentioned Justin Boer.
Altuve got hit in the wrist, I think, earlier in the game. And I saw something where he was in a lot of discomfort. But then he had a base hit that drove in two runs. He hit a homer, so Altuve's fine.
Yeah, and D. Gordon's back at the top of the lineup for the Marlins after being demoted to the ninth spot over last weekend.
Yeah, D. Gordon back in the leadoff spot, 255, the OBP sitting right now at 306. You guys mentioned Justin Smoke just a second ago. Smoke and the Blue Jays fell to Atlanta 10-6. Smoke, of course, with his eighth home run of the year. The batting average for Justin Smoke sits at 283, the OBP at 333.
Yeah. Fun stat that I retweeted last night. Freddie Freeman has now faced 10 different teams, and he's homered versus all of them.
Yep.
That's a hell of a stat. Oh, that's a great stat. He's Freddie Freeman.
Freeman, he gets it done. If his team was any good, he could be the MVP.
The team's not that bad, though. It's not as terrible as it has been.
14-21, they're awful.
Yeah, they kind of suck.
I think they'll finish 500.
Wow.
I will take the under, happily.
By the way, Smoke has hit four home runs in each month so far. The first month, he had 273. This month, he's hitting 300.
The Braves are one loss away from having the worst record in baseball. So, I don't know why you can say they're not that bad. They're awful.
They got to play better. Yeah. They got to do better.
You know what? I'm probably wrong on that one.
It's okay.
I feel like
they only beat the Mets. It's why.
Yeah, but I think they're a better team than they're currently playing. I'll say.
Yeah,
I don't think they're a great team.
I think they're a 500 ball.
They got some pieces on the squad, though.
I'm not going to make a bet with you on it, but I think they could be 500.
Matt Kemp batting 346.
He's awesome.
You know what? To Corey's point, though, he said Corey made it sound like there's nobody around him in the lineup, and I don't think that's true.
Well, he's got a nice the top of the order is very nice.
I didn't say that, Scott. What did I say?
You said there's nobody around him.
No, he said if he had a good team, had a winning team,
if the team was good, then he would be the MVP.
Which I hate. The lineup around him, they got some good hitting there.
I don't know how you feel about it, Scott.
In order to win the MVP, you got to like make the playoffs.
Yeah, but see that. Scott, how do you feel about that?
Bryce Harper didn't make the playoffs. He won the MVP.
I said he had an historic season, though.
Right. You don't have to wait the playoffs to win the MVP.
Yeah, but Scott, in most cases, like Matt Kemp got robbed that year. They gave it to Ryan Braun because his team made the playoffs, and Matt Kemp should have gotten the MVP that season.
Bartolo Colon, who used out syringes as well, by the way. 5 innings, 7 hits, 3 runs, 2 earned walks, 2 just struck out 1. Mike Bolzinger got bombed.
No shock there.
2/3, 8 hits, 6 runs, 5 were earned. Quickly, the Angels defeated the White Sox last night. My man, Jesse Chavez, gets the win. 7 innings, 3 runs.
Bud Norris saved number 8.
Yes, he did. Yeah, there you go, Scotty. Nice job by Bud Norris.
Roll it up, Scotty.
Last night.
Roll it up,
and
Scotty.
The reason I picked up Jesse Chavez more than anybody else, he was facing Mike Pelfrey. I was guaranteed a win. It was the biggest.
Scott Engel.
Nice job by Jose Abreu
on
last
floor.
Night. And
Scott Engel.
Mudika said, Mike Trout, his fourth home run in a row, 4 games in a row.
Scott Engel.
Stick around.
Take us out,
psychologist. Coming up with us next.
Take us out, Scotty. Roll it out, Scotty. Scotty Love on the floor. Scotty Love on the floor. Scotty Love on the floor.
Hey. We are back here on the Roto Experts in the Morning, and it seems like something's missing here. We have Corey Parsons here, Sky Angle's here, but instead of Matt Modica, in his place, Dr. Paul Scheimer, a legit sports psychologist. Corey, we've been talking about getting a sports psychologist for months on the program, and finally, we have made it happen. Dr. Scheimer, how are you,
sir? No doubt.
I'm really fine.
Oh, we're thrilled
to be here.
We are thrilled to have you because we got a lot of like intense questions that we want to ask about a lot of these baseball players, some football players that I got to know like what we're making up is affecting them or what's real. So we're hoping you're going to be able to help us out with that.
Oh, no problem. You know, I know sometimes what's real, sometimes what's not real, but sometimes what's not real is more impactful than what's real.
Oh, that's very good right there, Doctor.
That sounds like Papa Parson quote.
That was very good. Doc, I'm Corey Parson, fantasy executive. Nice to meet you.
Hey, Corey.
All right, so let's hop right in it. Oh, I thought you was giving this to me, Greg. Let's hop right into this. A couple weeks ago, I had a situation up at Fenway Park with Adam Jones of the Baltimore Orioles. He goes up there. Fans kind of get on him, give him a tough time. A bit racial things were said towards Adam Jones and stuff like that. Do you think that as when he goes back up there the next time to play, they also was tension, it was bean balls and stuff like that. When he goes back up there next time to play, do you think it's motivation for him, or do you think that maybe he starts to worry about the situation?
Well, I don't know Adam Jones from a hole in the wall, but I can't imagine that hadn't had an enormous effect on him. And if he's walking into the ballpark and there's people behind him who he's not looking at, obviously, but only can imagine what's going on, I would imagine it would affect him. It's going to take him a while to get past that experience. It had to be very frightening. And I'm sure the management and the players on the team all backed him up and don't worry, we'll be there for you. But he needs everybody around him to kind of get past the experience that he had. He can't feel alone out there in the outfield.
Yeah. So, but you don't think it'll affect him at the plate or anything like that, being a professional athlete? He's been playing for a while, obviously.
Well, we're all human, Corey. Yeah. You know, even if we're a professional athlete, if something like that begins to occur and you get frightened for your life or concerned for being injured, I can't imagine that it doesn't affect how you think. And if you think differently, then your muscles are different. And then if your muscles are different, then your performance is different, and so on, because there's a body-mind connection all the time.
Scotty, go ahead, man.
Dr. Scheinberg, we met at Citi Field. You were there for the Matt Harvey press conference where he apologized to the organization, the fans, the media. You wrote a piece analyzing his apology for New York Sports Day. Where do you think Harvey's head is at right now? You know, he didn't pitch too well in his last start. How much do you think mentally it's affecting his performance, number one? And can he ever get back to being, you know, the guy that was on top of the city from a performance standpoint?
Well, I think that if I remember the Harvey history, is that Harvey had more than one experience like this. He's had two or three situations in which he didn't exactly live by the rules. I think something is going on with Harvey. You know, somebody can, it's easy to apologize. Hey, I'm sorry. He's kind of, excuse me, I'm fine. And look nervous, and because he's in front of the media, maybe he just got a little bit reamed by the manager. So he looked very nervous, but it doesn't convince me that an apology is the same as changing your behavior or changing your thinking. I think there's something going on with Harvey internally that he has to take a very serious look at, and I think the management of the Mets have to take a very serious look at.
You made a good point right there, Doc. How can you tell if the apology is sincere and if his behavior is going to change, or is he just saying it to get past the incident? Okay.
It's not easy, but what you wanted to see is that whatever is said, the behaviors line up with what is being said by him. Part of the problem with Harvey is that he may apologize, but then he starts doing stuff again that doesn't fit with what he's talking about. So my tendency is to watch what people do, not necessarily what they say.
Right, because you made the point about, you know, there was the history before when he missed that workout in the playoffs with the Mets in prior to the 2015 postseason. And, you know, Mark Carreg of Newsday brought it up in the press conference that you know, you said when you missed, you're saying the same thing now you said then, which is it's not going to happen again.
Yeah, and he may even believe what he's saying, but that doesn't necessarily, he's fundamentally changed in whatever way he needs to change in order to get himself in line. So I think that we have to wait and see on the Harvey situation. I would guess, you know, based upon predicting behavior in the future, that whatever we've done last is usually what we do next. So that, and that's a 50% probability only, but it is the best variable to look at to know what Harvey's going to do. So I'm just focusing on what he's doing now and what he did before. And what he did before was he lied to management, and he deceived his team, and we'll see if he's really as sorry and going to change his ways as he said he's going to.
We're talking to Dr. Paul Scheinberg, a sports psychologist. And Paul, what has me going, and one of the things that Corey and I, there's two major incidents that Corey and I thought, man, I'd love to talk to sports psychologists about this. And the first comes in the form of Matt Shoemaker. Last year, last August, Matt Shoemaker got hit in the face with a baseball.
Right.
Like, guy hit the ball, hits him in the face,
right,
and he gets taken off. We have seen this with countless pitchers over the years. We've seen this with hitters like Giancarlo Stanton, who now wears a mask on his helmet. How do you come back from that and get back on the mound?
I'd be done, Doc.
I would never want, I'd be petrified to get on the mound again if someone hit a baseball into my face.
Well, I think you have to go back, if you're going to go back, very, very slowly and take it step by step. There's no question that it had to be a traumatic experience, to say the least. It's happened before, and pitchers have come back, sure, and pitched. But whether he can is going to depend upon how much he works on dealing with the trauma that was created by this impact. He clearly was deeply affected, both emotionally and physically. So I would say he can come back, but he has to really do some serious work in order to get there. And the management has to be very, very careful and patient with him.
The other major player we wanted to bring up, having what we seem like could be mental issues, is Kevin Kiermaier. Now, Kiermaier's turned it around with a bat in recent days, but he was really struggling. He was batting second all year, dropped to the eighth spot, and he is known as arguably the best fielder at all in baseball, and twice over the last 2 weeks, clean single up the middle, and he just misses it. Ball goes all the way to the wall, inside the park, a little league, I should say, home run happens. How does struggles at the plate, how could they affect you in the field?
Well, they affect your sense of trust in your body. And unless you have some kind of trust in what that your body will perform right in general, it's hard to translate being successful in one part into another part. So just because he probably believed he had the ball, that he was going to field it, and it was way off target, there's no question that he begins to question, am I really as good as I think I am or everybody else thinks I am? How can I trust that my hands will do the right thing? And he has to build up the sense of security that he has the hand-eye coordination so that it doesn't translate into other parts of his game. So,
but as a professional athlete, you know, isn't it almost like muscle memory, just like reflex to do that kind of thing?
It is, but once you get in your head,
right,
something that says, maybe I can't,
yeah,
maybe I don't have muscle memory, whatever you want to call it, then it begins to translate to other parts of your playing the game. So the problem is that it gets in their head that they can't do it. It's almost like any other performance issue. Once you begin to question whether you can do this, now it's a thought. And what do you do with that thought? Does it translate to other parts of your whatever your life is, in this case, baseball, and hitting a ball, catching a ball, throwing a ball.
As a sports psychologist, how do you work these players through this? How do you work a Kevin Kiermaier through this? How do you work a Matt Shoemaker through this?
Visualization is one way.
Mm.
I want them
Interesting.
I want them to be able to see that they can do what they failed to do. And it may take a while for them to get another thought and visualization into your head. So I work very slowly with getting people. I worked with an Olympic athlete once, side story for a second, and he couldn't visualize winning the gold medal, so he only won the silver. He said if he could visualize winning the gold, he would have won the gold. And that's true for all of us. You have to be able to visualize what you want your body to do. And once you doubt that you can, and once you can't see it anymore, it doesn't happen.
That makes a lot of sense, Doc. I guess the biggest story of the sports year so far, maybe we get into it after the break. The Atlanta Falcons had a 25-point second-half lead in the Super Bowl versus the New England Patriots. Obviously, we know how this ends. The Patriots come back and they win in overtime. Going into 2017, this has to be something that the Falcons organization, the players, coaching staff, is going to, the fans too, because the fans have got to be heartbroken.
Right.
That's going to carry into the 2017 season. I got to think that that's going to be an issue. So when we come back on the other side, that's something that we would like to get into. Talk about that situation with the Atlanta Falcons and how you expect their players to be able to rebound.
I want to talk about the Atlanta Falcons as well as Odell Beckham and his ability to control his emotions on the field and how he reacts. This is the Road to Experts in the Morning Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We are joined by Dr. We are joined by Dr. Paul Scheinberg here, sports psychologist. It's awesome. Stick around. More Road to Experts in the Morning coming your way right after this. We're back here on the Roto Experts in the Morning. Dr. Paul Scheinberg is in studio with us, a sports psychologist, kind of working through the issues of some of the athletes that I know you guys have had questions on, we have had questions on, and Corey brought up a great point about the Super Bowl.
Yeah, Atlanta Falcons, 25-point leads in the second half against the New England Patriots. Really just had to get another first down or two. The game's over. They're the Super Bowl champions. Didn't end up that way. How do they transition into 2017?
Well, they could go either one way or the other. It could become a thing of, like, we'll never get there.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get close, but we'll never get there. And it becomes, like, part of the team concern, like they worry about this. Or they could actually use it for them to motivate them and say, we're not going to let this happen again. We're going to drive right through to the end. This is a 60-minute game or whatever. And we're going to play right through to the very end, even past it if we have to. We're going to just win this. So it depends upon what their drivers are. If their drivers are, oh my God, I'm going to repeat what just happened, then we got a problem. If it becomes an intense motivator, they're going to win next time.
Aren't professional athletes trained to basically think, though, to use it as a driver?
I don't know if they're trained to. I don't know if anybody trains professional athletes to think that way, but they should be trained to think that way, to be able to turn what's a dark or negative thing that happens into something positive and a motivating force.
Yeah, I guess it sounds different than what they tell the media, yeah.
Talking to Dr. Paul Scheinberg, a sports psychologist, and sticking with football here for a moment, Odell Beckham Jr. is always in the news, right? Mm-hmm. Odell Beckham is somebody that the off-the-field antics, the on-the-field antics, and it's just so much emotion on every play, in every game, and the camera is always on Odell when he's eating dinner, when he's in a club, who he's with, who he's not with. Certainly the boat scandal that he created himself down in Miami. Can all of these outside factors, like with getting so amped up for a game, could all of these outside factors, and you can say the same thing for Yasiel Puig, who races cars 100 miles an hour and, you know, doesn't, and may have had a language issue. So both of us, so everyone else is at this table, the maturity issues. And can these outside factors, I guess, affect you on the field? Being so amped up for a game, we've seen Yasiel Puig so amped up for a playoff game that he'll throw a ball from right field, you know, over the backstop, right?
Yeah.
Can these mental issues affect you on the field?
Oh, absolutely. They can affect you on the game. It depends upon the personality of the person we're dealing with. Is it just simply that he's a hyped up guy who has all this energy and it works for him, or sometimes it doesn't work for. Is he just somebody who needs to function at that high energy level? You start tampering with Odell, his personality, and try to get him to calm down and relax and be mature and handle things just right. You got a different person on your hand, and I don't know if that's the best thing for Odell. I think maybe the best thing for him is to let him be who he is, but create certain boundaries or limits. Like, you can't go racing boats around Miami. That's going to possibly endanger your health. But I think you can't change the fundamental him. I mean, that's what makes him fabulous.
No doubt about that. But to be on the field and getting in players' faces, I mean, starting fights, that's not costing your team. Getting right. in a fight with a field goal net right. is hurting your team. How do you basically take the good of Odell being the super emotional guy along and get rid of the bad part of Odell, I guess?
Well, I don't know if you can get rid of the bad part, but you can say, are you interested in your team winning? Are you a member of this team, or are you just Odell looking for a lot of attention and having a lot of fun for yourself and like not concerned about the impact of what that is on the team?
Sounds like him.
We're talking to sports psychologist Dr. Paul Scheinberg, who's nice enough to join us in studio to chat about some of the players that are trying to make waves here.
Doc, I got something specific. We're in baseball season right now, and just knowing me, like the kind of person I am, so like, it's certain things that would bother me if I was a player, professional athlete.
Okay.
Striking out, like, a lot. Like, 2-3 times every night. Striking out. Because you got to feel, when you go back into the clubhouse, your teammates are like, Jesus, this dude hit the damn ball at some point. So you start to get down on yourself. You start to think your teammates are down on you. So from that aspect, striking out. And then from a pitcher, walking batters. Because, you know, you walk a guy, that's when a big inning can start. So those little personal failures inside of the game of baseball, how do those affect? Because I kind of feel like if I was striking out 2-3 times, I'm going to continue to strike out until they send me down.
Oh, that's what you would feel about your future.
I would feel bad.
I'm going to be a strikeout guy.
And I would worry about it.
And your sense of your future would be like you're going to be in the minors.
Well, somehow. Yeah. I mean, I'm quite sure.
And it would
sure.
get in your head.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, this is all noise
yeah.
in your head. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the question is, I guess you're asking, does it become so fixed as an issue for you, whether you're a pitcher who's trying to throw the ball over the plate or you're a hitter who's trying not to strike out, does this become your identity?
Yeah.
Or is this something that you're willing to adjust, work on, take instructions about? If you're not willing to and you're just this guy who just, you know, swings for the fences and misses a lot and you believe that's all you are, then you're done. You have to be. I find a lot of players are not willing to take instructions, are not willing to step back and listen to what their batting coaches or their pitching are really saying to them. They're so locked into themselves that they can't hear and adjust their behavior in order to not have these terrible things continue to happen.
Dr. Marshawn Lynch is coming back with the Oakland Raiders, going back to football real quick.
Sure.
After a year off, you know, guys won the Super Bowl. You know, been part of a great team, et cetera. But now he took a year off. Now he's coming back to play for his hometown team. But he did take a year off, and he was battling injuries and wasn't quite himself in his final season before he retired and took that year off. Can he return to top form, you believe? Like, I'm not asking you from the physical perspective, but what's the mental perspective after taking a year off?
Well, I think there's a couple of things going on. One thing is, I think when you're away from the game, especially like football, for a year and didn't play well at the end of the year before, that you wonder how much of that is going to carry over, number one. Number two, the game is faster when you've been away from it. In other words, one of the things you hear, whether it's basketball or football, is that when people go and step away or been injured for whatever the reasons are and come back, they experience the game much faster than they're ready to accept or ready to react to. So the concern I would have with Marshall is he prepared mentally to be able to react as quickly as he did when he was playing consistently? I don't know the answer to that, but I think it's going to take a while for him to adjust to how fast things are going.
We're talking with Dr. Paul Scheinberg here. He's a sports psychologist. And Paul, I have another question regarding Carmelo Anthony, right? In New York City, of course. And it's not even necessarily based on Melo. It's been a lot of players. Melo is just the prime example, is the latest example of all of a sudden you cheated on your wife. You may have a child with another person. How do you separate that from what you do on the basketball court or on the baseball diamond or on the NFL, on the field? How do you separate your life, your personal life, basically coming out in the newspaper, online, on the radio, on our show? How do you separate what is going on in your personal life and your job on the field?
It's called compartmentalization.
This is interesting.
Okay, that we can, as human beings, deal with a tragedy in 1 minute and then in the next minute turn to our work and get incredibly focused. So the ability to compartmentalize different parts of our lives is really important to being successful, so that if something bad happens in one, it doesn't just run off into the next. You are actually able to psychically say, no, I'm playing basketball now. So regardless of what's going on. And some people thrive on drama. I mean, I don't know if Carmelo is one of those people, but if he's got chaos...
Oh, he plays this city. I can promise you he is. With this general manager. For this stupid owner. Yeah, continue, sorry.
Some people really get turned on by drama in whatever part of their life, and it gives them this energy and boost to play incredibly well.
Doc, let me ask you this. When you look at a rookie, we just had the NFL draft, a rookie quarterback, somebody who's brand new to a team that has to step right into it, the ultimate leadership role. That must be tough for rookie quarterbacks to handle that situation.
I think it depends upon where they were, maybe in college. Mm-hmm. Were they somebody who's a take charge kind of guy, and they can just really have the ability to step forward and not boss people around, but be the leader of a team? I mean, I'm sure that professional teams are looking for that kind of personality when they draft somebody. Does this guy have the ability to step in and say, listen, this is my team right now. This is our team. We're going to go and get it. Some people just get scared. You could tell.
There you go. Sports psychologist Paul Scheinberg, thank you so much for hanging out with us this morning. It's very insightful. I feel much smarter now. So thank you very, very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
we really
get your card, Doc. I may need to make a visit.
Corey needs to learn how to compartmentalize.
I need to start compartmentalizing, Doc.
I'll make some room for you.
Thank you, sir.
We appreciate it. Paul Scheinberg, sports psychologist, thank you so much. And where can we read more about you and learn more about you?
I have a magazine in sports psychology called Psyched, and it's on the internet, www.psychedonline.com.
There you go. Dr. Paul Scheinberg, sports psychologist. We'll come back, we'll wrap up the show, find out what's going on in old school fantasy right after this. It's Road Experts in the Morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Final couple minutes. Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Simulcast on the Fantasy Sports Network as well. What does that move?
I think that's
synthesizers.
Yeah. Interesting. Do you know what this song is?
No, but it's good. I like it.
It's On the Floor by Jennifer Lopez.
I think I've heard it before. I just didn't recognize it. That's a good one. It's got a good groove to it. You like J-Lo's music?
No. Not particularly.
Yeah.
Doesn't do it.
Do you like this one, though? You sound like you knew immediately what
it was. Well, I knew what it was. It doesn't really mean it.
Because he's heard it a million times.
Yeah. No, yeah. It doesn't really do it for me either, to be honest.
I was never a fan of J-Lo, but like post 40, she's been looking hot.
I don't think she's changed how she's looked in the 20 years.
I think there's been a change.
Really?
I think she looks much better now.
Really? Huh.
She's cooled out. You know what I'm saying? She can get it.
Fantasy Jack proves.
She can get it.
Yeah, what exactly does it mean? What
could you want to know what it is?
Yes. Please educate us.
Yeah. Oh, boy. What do we got, Greg? What's going on with you?
Well, you know what? Just a couple minutes left in the program today. I want to, I guess, kind of wrap up with what we were talking about throughout the program, which is anticipation, certainly, with some of these injured guys, but also being cautious in our approaches with certain players. Like, I've brought up these fringy stars, the Eddie Butlers, the Mike Clevengers of the world.
Right.
And Scott, of course, you brought up Seth Lugo, and I threw out the Tyson Ross. It's just like, the story remains the same. There can never be too much pitching. There can never be... we have to take shots where we can, but more often than not, it's going to just hit us in the face. You know, last night I got lucky with Jesse Chavez. I got unlucky with Joe Musgrove. The eternal search, to my opinion, will always continue, Matt.
Yeah, but when you do hit on that player, especially one you don't expect to hit on, that's like such a boom. And that can really catapult your team. And like you said, just look at the starting pitching landscape right now. It is decimated. And it's going to be guys that you're picking up here and there that you hit on that are really going to help you win.
Yeah, it's like the perfect example is in the Greenwich Street Tavern League, Greg. I got Jason Vargas in the 25th round.
Sure.
Yeah.
So that's good. That's good value.
Yeah.
Fantastic value.
How are you doing in that league, Scott?
I moved up to 6 today.
Nice.
Yeah. We're checking standings now on May 15th, huh?
No, I am checking the standings now. In the first month, I don't. Now I am.
Now there's team a little
it's
better.
It's mid-May. I moved up to second in my Dynasty League.
I always say I'm not going to check the standings, but how do you not? Every day you pull up the page.
I have people that say they don't check the standings. I don't buy that not one
second.
League
home.
Are you calling me a liar?
I don't buy it not one second. When people say they don't check the standings, I do not buy it.
I do not check the standings in the first month, and I don't watch live scoring in fantasy football. Are you calling me a liar?
It's not even about being a liar, Scott. I mean, no. Just when you go to that page, I'm not saying you are actively looking to see the standings. You just, in my opinion, you just can't help but see it.
Well, I'm saying if I...
I agree with you.
There's no reason to play.
You're not checking standings, you're not looking at live scoring while you're playing. I have the roster. Not everybody thinks like you, Corey. Just because you don't do it doesn't mean other people don't do it. That's what I have a problem with. I have my team page bookmarked with some leagues, and I'll just go directly to team page, and I might not look at the standings.
Yeah, I mean, I try not to really get too caught up.
For a month.
But it is amazing how your mood changes when you have a good night and you wake up that morning and you're looking at the
standings. If I watch live scoring during football, it's going to drive me absolutely crazy. So I just wait till 7 o'clock.
You need to get the doctor back in here.
That's true.
And you wait till 7 o'clock and be like, oh, no, the executive beat me again.
Is that why you're 5-9 against me?
And the most important,
game
that we played against each other, I beat you.
And you did win the championship, so it didn't matter.
All right, then. Just to let you know.
Corey, you didn't win no chip.
What's up next on the OGs, Corey?
Coming up on the OGs, we got some fantasy football talk coming up. Plus, we'll get into today's baseball slate. Looking at tonight in the NBA and NHL. Me, Matt, and George, you already know.
Absolutely. For Matt Modica, for Corey Parson, for Scott the King Angle and Paul Scheinberg, we appreciate you joining us. My name is Greg Sussman. Have a fantastic Tuesday afternoon. We'll see you right back here, 8 a.m. Eastern, on the Road to Experts in the Morning. Bye-bye.